Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
Welcome to Formula Y. This is the official Formula One podcast that helps you understand some of the more complicated bits of F1. After all, the more you know about the sport, the more you love it. I'm Christian Hugill. This is Katie Osborne.
In every episode, we get help from all sorts of clever people in F1 to answer a question that starts with a why. And this week, we're going to find out why F1 teams need simulators. We've got four guests who are here to help make us experts in all things sims.
Now, simulators have become almost as vital part of modern Formula One as the cars themselves. Now, you might have heard them mentioned over the course of a race weekend and either never fully understood what they are, or maybe you've never grasped just how important they are and why teams couldn't live without them. Well, you soon will, my friends, because coming up, we've got an ex-F1 race driver and current reserve driver who uses them every week.
That's right, Stoffel Van Dorn is a Formula E champ. He's also won the feeder series to F1, then called GP2. Plus, he's raced in over 40 F1 Grand Prix. Now, he's a reserve driver at Aston Martin, and guys, we're going to hear from him shortly.
Also on the way, a rare interview with a key behind-the-scenes boss at Alpine for a tech perspective on why sims matter. We're going to be joined by their technical director, Matt Harmon.
Plus, we have a racing driver with a super unusual route into Formula One. We're going to Red Bull Racing to hear from Sebastian Job. Now, he's gone from being an esports superstar to working on Red Bull's real-life sim. Now he even helps Sergio Perez and the world champ Max Verstappen with their setups on race weekends.
Sebastian has such a cool story. But before all of that, every time we need a sciencey thing explaining on Formula Y, we turn to an actual doctor, our resident science expert, Dr. Deandra Leslie Pilecki. She is one of the world's leading motorsport scientists. Dr. Deandra, welcome back to Formula Y.
Thanks for having me back.
You are most welcome. We're grateful to have you here. Let's start with the real basics, Deandra. What exactly is a simulator?
Well, a simulator, a lot of people will say a simulator is like a video game, but it's far more than that. If you go to any of the simulators run by the major race teams or the manufacturers, you're talking about a racing seat that is mounted on a bunch of gimbals, which will allow that seat to move in six dimensions, that is X, Y, Z, and all three angles. So basically it can respond to or simulate any kind of change, including things like elevation, the forces you're going to feel going into corners, things like that. It is like climbing into a race car. Everything looks like the inside of the race car, except for the fact that when you hit something, it doesn't hurt.
God bless.
But the other thing that's in there are the engineers. Because, of course, the engineers are the mediators between the drivers and the cars. Now, back when you could just pretty much test as much as you wanted, engineers got to know their drivers by testing. And so, you know, they would run a lap. The engineers would have all this data and look at it and see if it was a good lap or a bad lap. And then they'd listen to what the driver said. You know, it felt oversteer here, understeer here. And that allowed them to sort of calibrate the driver. Well, with testing going away, real on-track testing going away, what they've got are simulators.
Now, Formula One teams used to be able to test their cars away from race weekends at specially arranged tests. They'd book a racetrack somewhere and spend a lot of time and money putting in lap after lap, gathering data, trying out new parts, all to try and find performance in their car.
But in modern Formula One, mid-season testing is banned. It's part of the sport's efforts to cut costs and travel less for the sake of the environment. At the start of the season, teams are allowed a very limited number of laps to check their new car's work in what's often called a shakedown. Then there are three official pre-season test days, usually a week or so before the first race of the season.
After that, when the season kicks off, the only time teams get to test their cars is during free practice sessions on race weekends. but they can use these simulators as much as they like. It means that sims have become more important and realistic than ever before.
It's very realistic. It's really pretty impressive. The drivers who test say that, you know, when they get on the track, it looks just like what it looked like in the simulator. So, you know, I mentioned the chair. They also have surround screens so that if you look out your left window or your right window, you're seeing what you would be seeing at the track. Many of these tracks have been LiDAR scanned. And so they go out there with a, you know, scanner and they get it down to the millimeter level on the track roughness. And so if there's a bump in the track, if there's a rough spot in the track, that's all replicated in the simulator.
Because I was about to say, how do you recreate on-track experiences in a room? I guess you're telling me it's lasers and things like that.
Yeah, lasers is always a good answer for anything.
Oh, I agree.
But in this case, it actually is the answer. You get resolution down to the millimeter scale. It's really impressive. Anyone who's done iRacing knows how detailed they can get. And then they add all the things like signage and caution lights and things like that.
Even the grandstands and making it look like coming into what turn one would be at the Indianapolis Motor Speedway and looking up and seeing how that depth perception really pays off. Is that the realistic approach for a simulator?
It definitely is. One of the most important things with the simulators is having the drivers establish their braking zones coming into turns. And usually they will use a reference point on the track, you know, the beginning of the grandstands or some feature that's there. And so having those helps them figure out when they're going to brake. One of the things you frequently hear engineers tell drivers is get in a rhythm. And that rhythm is really important. And that means braking at the same spot. You know, you're doing a little bit of adjusting to try to get better each time, but you want to be consistent. And so the only way you get consistent is just repetition. And with the lack of on-track testing, they have no way to do that other than simulators.
But it's not just for the driver's sake, if you see what I mean. It's not just them picking braking points, is it? It's also the cars, because I know the team test new parts in the sim. So they're simulations of how they think the part will help. Already my simple mind is being blown. How much of a scientific feat is it to be able to do things like that, to take a car part that's going to go on an actual car, on an actual track, but test it in a simulator? I sort of say it like I don't believe it, even though I know full well it happens.
Teams can basically develop an entire car in a computer, and they can model how that car works. And then, as you say, they can change a part, and they can say, well, that was better, or that was worse. Maybe we use that part at this track, not that track. They can look at tire pressure values for things. They can look at suspension setups. They can be doing all this kind of simulation.
Deandra, once again, as with last time you were on this podcast, you have taught us a huge amount and made me wish that I was A, more intelligent, and B, had listened more in science at school. So thank you for coming on and explaining stuff to us in a simple way that even I can understand.
Don't underestimate yourself. You can get this. Trust me.
You're helping me. Thanks, Deandra. Speak to you again soon.
Thank you.
Christian, we always love having Deandra on the show, and she will be back with us on Formula Y real soon. Now, you've just heard her mention iRacing. We'll be looking more at how esports and F1 simulators combine a little later with Red Bull's Sebastian Job.
Yeah, we certainly will. So, we know what sims are and a bit about why they're so important. Time to hear from someone who uses them all the time.
That's right. Reserve drivers are such an important part of Formula One. Not only do they travel to race weekends ready to step in at super short notice, should a team's race driver become ill or injured, but they also play a key role in developing and improving a team's car too.
Simulator duties are shared between the race and reserve drivers. Sims are used in the periods between races. And on race weekends, there will not only be reserve drivers at the track ready to jump in, but there will also be others back at the team's HQ working on the simulator, trying to improve the race driver's setup.
That's right. And our next guest, Stoffel Vandoorne, not only raced two seasons for McLaren, but he's become known as one of the most skilled test and reserve drivers on the grid. Stoffel, welcome to Formula Y.
Yes, thank you. First time.
First of many, we hope. And Stoffel, you are kindly speaking to us on a day when you're in the Aston Martin factory near Silverstone, driving on the sim. Can you tell us what you've been doing so far?
So a lot of new parts, new things get tried in the simulator first. So that's kind of what we've been doing this morning so far. A big topic has been tires, let's say. You know, can't give away too many details, but it's been work around the tires and obviously some future developments for this season's car.
Soffel, obviously, this is a broad question because there are so many things. But give us an idea of just some of the most important things that can be learnt from the simulator.
A lot of it is aerodynamics development, because now teams, they work in the wind tunnel, they work with CFD, which is kind of the virtual development of the car. But then we try it out in the simulator as a real car, let's say, and you know, you can start to feel the kind of weaknesses, because that's always what we're after. We're always after what is wrong with the car, you know, rather than what is right with the car. That's kind of the nature of Formula One.
Isn't that the nature of drivers and motorsport? It's always the chasing down what's not right.
It is. I mean, you know, when the car is not fast enough, you know, the driver is perfect, the car is not good enough. And when the car is good, it's always the driver's fault. So
always someone else or something else to blame.
Exactly.
That's sort of what the team is learning from it. But it's also important for the driver to learn from it as well, right?
Yep, definitely. Especially when there is some new tracks on the calendar. You know, all these new tracks, they're always kind of laser scanned and they pretty much look exactly like the real circuit will be. So if you're heading to a new circuit, it's extremely valuable to know where the track is going, where the bumps are, how much curbs you can take. It just saves you so much time in the beginning of practice one to just go out and learn the track, because you're kind of immediately in the groove and you can get on with the normal work, let's say.
When you're talking about the virtual development, what is that exactly that the team or that you are figuring out when you mention virtual development?
Well, Formula One, it's all about correlation. So, you know, in the simulator, you've got the luxury, you can kind of try a lot of crazy things because it's just a few codes in the software that you're changing, and then you go and try it. So, you know, even if it's wrong, you're not going to get hurt, or nothing bad is going to happen. Even if you have a spin or if you have a little crash, it's just a simulator, so it doesn't really matter. Whilst in the reality, you can't afford those things, let's say. So that's why we try out the crazy things on the simulator first before we take them to the real track.
And you feel like those cross over relatively, I mean, there's a good comparison between real life and sim life, except for the fact that when you crash, it doesn't hurt.
There is a very good
ego. It might hurt your ego, I suppose, a little bit, but it doesn't hurt.
We never crash. I mean, come on.
No. Oh, no, never.
No, never.
But yeah, it's, you know, you're always trying to develop the simulator in parallel to the real racing car, because you might start out the year not really, you know, matching what the simulator is like compared to the real track. But as the year goes along, you start to learn more and more about the real car on track as the race is going along, and then you try and kind of get the simulator closer to the real car, so you can actually start to use it as a proper tool to do setup work.
You guys spend a long time on these sims, don't you? Just how long do you spend driving the sim on an average day? How many laps? It must get tiring, because it's longer than a lot of people think, isn't it?
Yeah, we're in there for a long time, you know. Usually it's like 9 to 5, but, you know, you'll be sitting in there for an hour and a half. You'll be doing laps, you'll be doing different test items, then you'll jump out for like 10 minutes or something to get a break. And then you'll be back in there. So it's a pretty long day.
And Stoffel, you mentioned Aston Martin. You are now one of Aston Martin's reserve drivers. And for those new to Formula One, reserve drivers can often be called to jump into the car for the race weekend if one of the race drivers is ill or injured. But obviously, a massive part of being a reserve driver is working on the sim as well. You've also worked on simulators at McLaren and at Mercedes at different parts of your Formula One career. How different are different sims at different teams?
They're very different, actually. First of all, you've got the hardware. So, you know, what the sim is like, how the movements are going of the simulator, even just the chassis you're sitting in. You know, every team has his own particular chassis, let's say, and steering wheel. So all of that makes quite a big difference. But then there's the biggest one is actually on the kind of the software side, you know, how they develop the model, what the car feels like, what the tires feel like. And obviously, you know, if you've got a good car, it will always feel better in the simulator than when you've got a bad car in reality. So even that makes a big influence.
Well, of course, you've raced on Grand Prix tracks from, you know, with F1, like we've mentioned, and of course GP2 and Formula E when you won the championship there. How does that simulator kind of compare from a realistic perspective?
The circuits are very close because they're all scanned. So all the bumps, all the, you know, the white lines, the walls, the curbs, where they are, they're pretty much exactly in the same place as they would be on the real circuit. So yeah, it's very realistic in that sense.
Stoffel, I know you've spent enough time in Great Britain to know that it rains a lot here. And obviously there are other tracks on the F1 calendar that like a bit of rain. Japan, you often see rain, for example. I'm curious, before those Grand Prix weekends where you know there's a higher chance of rain, can you simulate weather, and do you use that tool on weekends where you think, right, we might get a bit of rain or there's rain forecast?
We can simulate it, although it is very complex, because when the car is moving a lot, when it's sliding a lot, that's kind of where some limitations come in of simulators, because, you know, we haven't got the kind of the movement that we could get in the real car, let's say. So usually, you know, we can simulate it, but it's not something we would actually do before an event where we know it's going to rain.
That's interesting. Yeah.
That is really interesting. You already mentioned that you don't crash ever, never, ever in a sim.
No.
But if you happen to crash in a sim, what does happen? I mean, it's not, again, my brain thinks of a game over, like Sega sign, but is there, that's clearly not what happens. Is the team disappointed? Like, what is the feeling that you have? Do you feel like a ding dong? Like, what is that feeling when you crash in a
No, I mean, it happens, you know, in the simulator it's quite common, because you're testing the limits, to be honest, and you know, you go over it quite a few times. But yeah, I mean, nothing bad happens, to be honest. It's, you know, there's a lot of safety features, so you're not going to get shaken around in there, and you're not going to hurt yourself. That's kind of, you know, the main thing is you can't hurt yourself, and you got to be, yeah, you got to be safe in there.
This might sound like we are like making this up for the purposes of the podcast, but we're not. Stoffel, we're about to let you go because you have got to get back into the simulator, which is genuinely the truth. But just finally, given we like to dig into some of the specific details about F1 on Formula Y that maybe you wouldn't normally get to find out about as a fan, is there anything else you wish F1 fans knew about the job of a simulator driver?
I would say the what not a lot of people know is kind of the work that goes on during the race weekend. Because after practice two, there is this thing called race support. So actually during the race weekend, there will be somebody in the simulator. Sometimes that's me, sometimes that's another racing driver as well. But we'll be kind of assisting the racing team on track. So usually after FP2, there's a lot of data being generated at the track, and then that gets fed back to the factory. And then usually the simulator guys, they will start a plan, let's say, or a big run plan where they're going to try out different setup routes. Usually it's pretty brutal hours depending on, you know, where Formula One is racing at the time. So often that's a night shift you're doing. You're starting at, I don't know, 7 p.m. at night and finishing at 4 or 5 a.m. So it's pretty tough. But it means that, you know, all these things that you're testing overnight, you send that information back to the track, and then, you know, the team kind of has a great overview on what works and what doesn't work, and then they can make a decision on what setup to qualify on.
That's not the shift you want to be on Australian Grand Prix weekends.
That's true. That is true.
At that point on an Australian Grand Prix weekend, nobody knows up from down in a time zone anyway. So You eat when you're just hungry at that point.
Stoffel, listen, we have loved having you on Formula Y. Hope to check in with you again in the future. And we're going to say it because I think it's fun. We will let you get back to the sip.
Thank you.
And off he went back to the sim.
You enjoyed that, didn't you?
I did. I've done so many F1 driver interviews while they're on a break from the sim, but never about the sim. Yeah, I'm easily pleased. What can I say?
Isn't that the truth? Awesome to speak to Stoffel. There is literally no better driver to have on when it comes to simulators and stuff. He has such a good reputation in F1 for the feedback he gives to his teams. A real team player and super quick race car driver, too. We will get back to explaining why simulators are so important in F1 very soon. But first, we love hearing from you on Formula Y.
We do. We want your questions about F1 for future episodes, please. Some we'll explain over the course of a full show. Others we can put to F1 experts in our quick fire special. So no matter how big or small the question, email it to whywhy@f1.com. And if you really want to make Katie happy, send it on a voice note so we can hear you on the pod, because it's the catchphrase of the podcast. Katie Osborne likes voice notes.
We also like getting your thoughts and comments, and we will read those out loud too. For instance, Gareth from Glasgow has listened to the very first few episodes and loves the podcast. Thanks, Gareth. He says, I'm a massive F1 fan and really got hooked during COVID and Drive to Survive. This has been such a fantastic addition to my morning commute to work. Thanks. And thank you.
Thanks. Thank you, Gareth. Now, Laurie Stone in a place that I cannot pronounce. Katie, go on.
Rancho Palos Verdes near LA. Woo-hoo.
Yeah, there. Says, hi, Katie and Christian. As a relatively new F1 fan, second year following, I love your show and its deep dives into the basics of Formula One. I'm still trying to understand the different strategy around overtaking and pit stops. Why can undercuts and overcuts be superior strategies? Would love to have you tackle this. Well, Laurie, good news. It is on the way very soon. Keep your eye out for part 2 of our quickfire Your Wise Answered special that Katie just mentioned. We put a load of questions to two F1 experts, and all of that is coming up in the next episode of that. So keep an eye on this feed.
And two more quick emails. Lara in Germany says, hey, Formula Y team. I like that she said team, by the way, there, Christian. Thanks for giving us such interesting insights into different aspects of the sport. Lara, you're welcome. Chrissy also says, hi, after growing up watching F1, back when it wasn't that easy to follow, I am now enjoying all the fun of F1 with my 3 sons. She says they're ages 12, 10, and 7. The podcast has been a very great way for them to learn more about the sport. And Mark Evie, 4180, left us a comment on Spotify, and he says, this is a fantastic podcast. Thanks so much for doing this. Thank you, Mark, for saying that.
I wonder why Mark's gone with 4180. There'll be a story behind that. Anyway, on that, it really helps us if you can give us a 5-star rating and leave us a nice review on Apple or Spotify or Google or wherever you get your podcasts. So thank you very much if you've already done that, and keep those questions coming in to why@f1.com or use the hashtag Formula Y on social media.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique Studio Plus suite awaits, with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your Studio Plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
Back to this week's question, Christian. Why simulators are so important in F1? We've got the science lowdown. We've heard from a driver. It's time to hear from Alpine's technical director, Matt Harmon. The sim is such an integral part of Matt's job. He leads a team which tries to get the absolute most out of the car, including overseeing how to make the chassis as effective as possible. That is one of the main reasons that simulators exist in F1. So, Christian and I started by asking Matt why the sim is so important for teams like Alpine.
Well, big picture, I think, you know, as the sport has progressed, particularly over the last 10 years, you know, our track testing ability the time that we have for track testing is dramatically reduced. You know, for the 2023 season, we only actually had 3 days of track testing. So the amount of time we have to optimize the car and the platform is very limited. And I think, you know, also to sharpen some of our tools that we use at the factory to optimize the car, it needs more than the data that we get from the track now from Fridays or from the winter track testing. So you know, in terms of needing the simulators, I think it's very, very important for us to allow us to optimize the car and get it into the good place. And we also, you know, we do need to also be able to support the race weekend as a whole. You know, it's quite well known that we will be running our simulators all the way through the race weekend, and our reserve drivers or our simulator drivers will be using that tool to cross check and validate new ideas for the race drivers themselves, and allow us to again put a little bit more performance on the car over the race weekend, which is really important for the race engineers and the drivers themselves. So yeah, they're a very important tool for us.
Matt, I'm fortunate enough to speak to Formula One drivers quite frequently, and they always say to me, "Oh, we've got a long time in the sim," or we speak to them on a break from the sim. And sometimes they're very long days and they're grateful to come out and see a bit of daylight by talking. Their bar's that low, they're even grateful to talk to me because they've spent so long in the sim. But what are you looking for from them in those sessions? When these drivers say you've got a long day in the sim, what are people like yourself, what are they after?
Well, a lot of the time, you know, the guys are Esteban and Pierre. They'll be in shortly, actually. And you know, a lot of the time, it's running through that setup, running through that configuration, and we do an awful lot of that. You know, there's a lot of questions that we like to answer in a little bit more detail around downforce level and some of the characteristics that they like. You know, we will often put them through their paces on drivability and a little bit of ride and lots of aspects like that. Because the good thing about the simulator is it's an experimental tool. It's a very consistent tool. It allows us to evaluate very, very small differences in characteristic very accurately, because you know, when you do that at the circuit, it's an evolutionary test at the circuit, because things change, tires change, tracks change, conditions change, temperature changes. So the good thing about the simulator is it really gives them that confidence and that feel to enter into the race weekend with a good starting setup. And that's why those days can often be very long and very dark. But they're very useful, and I think the tool that we have here at Enstone is quite sharp in that regard.
They have worse jobs, don't they? They shouldn't complain too much.
they never complain. They're actually, in fairness to them,
no, race car drivers. That is one thing that they never do. Race car drivers never.
No,
complain.
never. They're very demanding, and they should be. And I think they do challenge us. And interestingly, sometimes, you know, in the simulator, we will come across some interesting developments. And I think that really helps us as well. They're there to challenge us as engineers. They're there to highlight things that they like and characteristics that they like, and challenge us to deliver them to the race car in hardware.
It's very nice to hear you say they don't complain, because I've definitely spoken to some people in F1 who say otherwise. So we know that the Alpine boys are better behaved.
I think it's not a complaint, is it? For me, it's just about them pushing. They need to really give us that accurate feedback. Otherwise, you know, that's the whole reason for them being here, quite honestly.
Does what you're asking from them on a day-to-day basis differ? Can, you know, on Monday, I really need you to focus on this, Esteban. On Tuesday, I need you to focus on this, Pierre. Or are you always looking for similar sorts of stuff from them?
It depends on what we're doing. So as I mentioned earlier, you know, sometimes we'll be doing race preparation. Sometimes we'll be doing new concept car preparation. So we'll be looking at a test that will tell us a particular aspect of a new car design that we'd like to trial and some options around it. And that at that point, it's less about correlating to a known baseline of a previous circuit. Also, we may be looking at a capability improvement for the simulator. So we may have improved our vehicle model that we use, or we may have improved our tyre model. And we want them to give particular feedback on that. So it very much depends on what type of experimental testing you're doing, and the conversations can ebb and flow, really. It's quite interesting.
It does sound really interesting. And I think from you talk about the experimental version of this and how consistent it is. But for someone who doesn't get in a sim, I don't even play video games. How does someone really set the sim up to get those different results, to understand today it's going to be about tires, tomorrow it's going to be about aerodynamics or whatever it is, and the third day is going to be about track setup and just understanding what the track and track flow is. Is that, like, again, is it a button on the sim, or
yeah,
is it really dynamic otherwise?
No, we run the simulator program the same way we run a test program at the circuit. Often the race engineers will be there running the driver, if it's the race driver. If it's a reserve driver, it will be run by the team in the simulator, and it's run a basic run plan. So essentially everybody knows what they're doing run to run. Each run is very well specified. It may be a different aero characteristic, and so in other words, the load we apply to the car in a downward direction. It may well be something to do with a particular specification of the tyre model, where we're looking at maybe a different coefficient. And we're both very, it's, like I say, it's very, very experimental. So we'll be changing things either in the ECU, either in the vehicle model, in some of the controls for the driver. But it isn't necessarily a button on the steering wheel. It can be done via the control systems that control the simulator itself.
I'm asking a really basic question here, but if Pierre came back, for example, and said to you, I need more downforce throughout turn 4 and 5 for this setup. I'm not an intelligent man, Matt, so I can't fathom in my mind how they work. Yeah. I'm fascinated by them.
No, it's a really, really good question. And I suppose when you're around it all the time, you take some of these things for granted. You know, actually the way that would work is that there is a particular aero map for that test. And that map maps out the aerodynamic loads across the vehicle in the simulation. So the simulation that runs the actual hardware. So what we would do there is we would have a number of different maps that would give you a characteristic of a certain level of load at the rear of the car, the front of the car, particular aero balance. And that would be how we would construct that test. So it's not a button that says more downforce, but it is, if you can imagine it as a map of the car and where you might apply load in a downward direction at a certain point of the car.
So you're talking about kind of that map and then how can you apply it? So give us some sort of insight on what that really means to somebody who says, okay, we want more downforce. We're going to implement that into the sim. We're going to take it to the track and then we're going to see how it goes. On a given race weekend, how long does that process really take?
Well, if it was something to do with an aero load, so if it was to do with an efficiency, so, you know, at certain tracks we have high downforce, certain tracks we have low downforce, it might be as simple as within our suite of components, be it front wing or rear wing, we may choose a different aero level that we would take to that track. So it would be very quick in terms of we would do the test, we would check the different efficiency of the downforce, and then we will select that wing and that will be our starting wing for each driver. If it's more conceptual and it's for maybe a future car, it may be that we have a look at a particularly different characteristic and then that sets the specification for what we might run in the wind tunnel and how we might develop the car in that direction to give us that characteristic. It's not necessarily a component we would change. It's an aero philosophy we need to move towards.
I was going to ask sort of what might you take from the sim and then sort of bring to track? And you gave a really good example there with a wing. So you might try a wing in the sim and then bring it onto track. Yep. However, the very nature of a sim, right, is it's a simulation. It's not the real thing, as otherwise you'd be out testing, which we've discussed at the start of this chat, you can't do. How much of an impact does sort of the correlation between the simulation and real life have? I guess that's really important. And is that what sort of sums up the quality of a team sim in terms of saying, well, actually, how we tested this wing in the sim and how it then worked in real life on the track are actually really similar or not so similar?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think it's all about as you go more from simulation in the loop or SIL all the way to full hardware in the loop, which is the car, and you transition through that. So we've got the SIL, we've got the DIL, and then we've got the hardware. So in the end, I think for me, when we do our pure simulation, so our desktop-based simulations, there are a lot of assumptions that we put in there. And also there are, for example, there is no driver in the loop for that simulation. So some of the characteristic he will have as a driver will not be included necessarily in every simulation. But then as we go into the driver in the loop side of things, you start to get that feel because what you're trying to understand there is not necessarily the top speed for that wing. You're trying to understand if you take that top speed advantage, how does that hurt you in the corners and what are you actually losing out? And that is something that is much more high or much higher fidelity when you've got the driver giving you that feedback. And those traction zones, those areas of drivability, how does it work with the power unit response, all these different things that we have to go through is really, really important. And then obviously we take it to the track and we test it very quickly after we've done that test and we get that feedback and that correlation. And then post-event, we will go back into the sim and we will recheck. So based on where we actually ended up after Baku, for example, we will come back to the simulator and we will then rerun that exact configuration. We will check and then we will close that loop. And that's how you manage your correlation.
Who's managing that? Like, who is saying this checkbox, we're going to move that checkbox down one checkbox. Okay, we've checked that box and we're going to now check another box. Like, that just seems like a lot to wrap one's head around as it relates to management of this stuff.
Yeah, well, there's a really, really talented group of people in the simulator themselves. You know, that's a really good team of technicians and engineers that run the facility, but also run the plan. But then also on top of that, we'll have the race engineers for the race drivers who will be operating the same as they would at the circuit. So they'll be sat there at the island running the drivers. There'll also be a control engineer there running the control side of the systems, you know, things like brake by wire and all the things in there that you need to have to make the car feel as it should, shifting, settings and the like. So I think, you know, it's a really good team, and that's the good part about it is you've got that consistency. You've got their race engineers there and their performance engineers, their control engineer from the pre-test, the post-test, and actually the race event itself. So it's that consistency of approach.
Well, Katie makes such a good point, because even so, that person's job who is to sort of update the sim with how that part actually behaved on track and then put that data into the sim, what an important role that is. And it's the sort of thing you don't hear about, do you? And I can remember talking to Lewis Hamilton in 2019. It's obviously in the middle of a real Mercedes dominance, and him saying, you just can't understand how many people are back at the factory making all this machine work. And I guess that's an example, Matt, isn't it? Of we see the drivers, we see race engineers, but all these people like yourself, Matt, behind the scenes in Formula One, why it's such a phenomenal team sport. I mean, I would have never have thought of, I've been following Formula One for 15 years, I'd have never thought of that role of that person to update the sim. Absolutely. It's such a team sport.
Absolutely,
isn't it?
You know, there's a reasonable sized group of people in our vehicle performance group, and within that group, they're looking at the tire models, they're looking at the overall vehicle model, they're looking at the control characteristics of the car, and those are the people that are not only deploying that understanding to the race car that you see at the weekend, but they're also updating that simulator to keep that correlation as close as possible.
Matt, you've given us such an insight on this world of simulators. Honestly, there's so much stuff there that I'd never even thought of. So I really appreciate it. Matt, will you come back on Formula Y again soon and help us with more technical knowledge?
I'll try. Of course I will. For you, anything.
You're a good man.
And Matt will be back on Formula Y very soon for an episode where we're going to be explaining why wind tunnels are so important.
Yeah, we're excited to have him back. It's very cool insight. I'd never thought of how simulators get like loaded with information by people. You hear simulators being talked about so often, but I'd never had such a detailed breakdown of exactly how they work before speaking to Matt. I really enjoyed that.
Yeah, it's very cool. As is the story of our final guest on this week's Formula Y. We've said it a few times in this episode that simulators do have certain similarities to game consoles. Now, imagine an F1 sim as the ultimate video game. Well, Sebastian Job is proof that the dreams of any gamer who wants to take the wheel in real life can come true. Sebastian has not only won multiple esports championships at Red Bull, but now he works on their real-life sim setups for Max Verstappen and Sergio Perez. Sebastian, welcome to Formula Y.
Thank you. Thank you for having me on. It's exciting.
We are very grateful for your time. We love having you here. You've probably, of all the guests we've ever had on this podcast, got the most interesting route into racing and the most varied career. Talk to us a little bit about your route into racing.
Basically, I started go-karting when I was about 12. So I'm 23 now. So that was 11 years ago. I did it for a year. Couldn't afford to go further, so I looked to sim racing. Basically, the age limit was 13, so as soon as I turned 13, I signed up. I did that for a hobby for a few years, not really going anywhere, but I was making waves within that kind of community. Got picked up by smaller like amateur teams, and eventually in 2018, I joined a team that eventually would go on to be Red Bull Racing Esports. Which was in 2019. And then for the last, well, now 4 years, which is crazy, I've been driving for Red Bull. And last year, I became the one of the Formula One sim test drivers for Red Bull Racing. So I was doing direct support for Max and Checo when they were at Zandvoort last year.
How did you go from joining as an esports driver to getting to work on the sim real life? How did that journey sort of internally for you at Red Bull work?
It was a weird one, to be honest. It kind of came out of nowhere. I think I just got a message one day saying, are you free on this day? We'd like to get you back in.
Wait, was this like a slide into the DM message? Or is this like a proper email that you thought was maybe fake? Or like, was it sketch?
It wasn't my boss at the time, but is now my boss.
Okay.
And they said, because I back in 2019 or late 2018, I went on the junior sim kind of to, we were doing a documentary series and this was part of it that they wanted me to, they wanted to see what an esports guy would be like on the Red Bull junior sim. We did that. I was not terrible, but I definitely wasn't very good. But they a couple of years on, I'm obviously a better driver. I'm a bit stronger.
I'm going to dispute that a little bit. You can't have been that bad because you've stuck around.
Well, I think the main issue was I wasn't strong enough physically. And it was a very different driving style. So, and I didn't quite understand that. I thought I was a little bit unaware of how much I need to adapt and just kind of, yeah, it didn't work. I was also a bit less mature than I would be a couple of years later, as you would be. I got asked, I think they were just like, they had a weekend where they didn't have a driver, maybe. So they wanted to put me in the junior sim, see how I got on, and that went well. And so I did the day there. They basically did their equivalent of assessments, and I passed. Like, obviously, there's no pass or fail, but, you know, they were happy with what they saw. So they asked me, can you stay tomorrow? So got a hotel that night, came back the next day, and the first thing I'm greeted by is an NDA that I have to sign. And from that point on, they put me in the F1 sim. We did a day of... They'd just done Hungary in the 2022 season, so they just come off that. And they put me on that track to compare to the data they had from Max. So I was like using his qualifying setup to compare directly, and it went well enough that they then asked me to come back for Zandvoort in a couple of weeks. And that's basically how it happened.
You know it's going to be an exciting day if it starts with signing a non-disclosure agreement. You know you're exactly in for something interesting.
Yeah, I wasn't warned about it at all. I just was told to, you know, I wasn't expected to come back for a second day. So when I was told that, I was like, oh, they got something coming here.
I'd ask you more about it, but I'm guessing you can't disclose it.
Yes.
Yeah. Well, yeah, pretty much.
Gosh, you're on it today, Christian. You are on it. I like it.
Does it feel surreal? And we've already discussed that you've got a mixed background. You've done plenty of, to use a term that some esports racers don't like, but real life racing, you know what I mean? And then you've done plenty of esports. But does it feel surreal as someone who spent so much time as an esports racer to then be working on setups during a Grand Prix weekend for Sergio Perez and the actual world champion?
Yeah, it's a little bit surreal, but I think I'm lucky that I've, as a person, never been too overwhelmed by that stuff. I don't know why. Like, I see some people, they get very excited to, you know, meet their favorite celebrities or whatnot, whereas I've always been someone that's not too bothered about it, so I kind of just take things in my stride, which I think helps in that kind of scenario, because it means that I'm all about doing the job. You know, I'm getting the feedback that they need. But it was, at first, I was a little bit almost afraid of giving bad feedback. They had so much trust in me straight from the get-go that it was not an issue at all. You know, I was there, like, thinking to myself, should I say this, should I say that? And then I just, you know, I would say everything, and they'd be like, wow, that's, yeah, exactly what we want to hear. That's that lines up with what we expected, because sometimes maybe I wouldn't be told what the change was, and it would kind of, I think when you're told what the change is, you know what to expect from the car, and then suddenly you already, before you give an answer on what changed, you kind of know what they want to hear, so you kind of, you give the answer based on that a little bit. So when they don't tell you something, it's purely on what you can feel, and that's when I'm starting to like panic a bit that I don't get it wrong. And you know, dealing with that at first was quite tricky, but eventually it's you realize they have trust in you, they trust your feedback, and it's you kind of just get on with it. And you don't notice, like, it when you're doing it wasn't like, oh, I'm doing setups for Max and Checo. I mean, I was, but it wasn't. It was more like, I'm just doing my job here, and if it's helpful for them, they're going to use it. If it's not helpful, then nothing lost, because they're just not going to do it.
Yeah, so you are seeing that correlation from what you're doing. You mentioned kind of on those Thursday, Friday, Saturdays and the setup days leading into it. You are seeing they can impact the race. They can impact their setup. They can impact their driving.
Yeah, I think when I did Zandvoort, that I actually came in the next day, because I was a little bit excited about it. I was like, well, what did we tell them to change? And they were saying, oh, they took these ideas, but they didn't take these ideas. And so I could see those directly impact the handling of the car when we were watching on boards, which I thought was really cool.
That's
more
cool.
From like a geeky view.
Yeah, that's real cool.
It is. And I was about, because Sebastian, it's all very well you saying, oh, I try not to get too overwhelmed, and you know, I'm quite cool with that, and I see people get excited. I'm not like that. I get very excited. That's really cool, isn't it? Like, you're watching the onboards over a Grand Prix weekend, and it's like, yeah, I helped with that. Thank you very much. That's so cool.
No, it was very exciting to kind of see that happen, because there were some changes that were more extreme than others that I could quite easily see, and then other ones that I wouldn't be able to tell from an onboard because it's too subtle.
Have you had any direct contact or feedback from Max and Checo?
Well, I speak with Max somewhat regularly just because he does a lot of sim racing. But
I say he posts about that too. Like, he's pretty engaged, yeah. It seems like, in that.
I mean, they were literally doing a stream of a watch along of a race I was doing like 2-3 days ago. So he's very involved with it all. But in terms of that, no, I'm giving feedback to the people running the sim.
Isn't
they pass that feedback along to the people at the track. It's not like I'm directly speaking to them.
Which is a full engineering team in and of itself, correct? Like, this is a fully separate, and they're the one then providing the feedback. So many tentacles in this thing.
I don't think I've even seen below the surface. I think there's even more people that are involved that I've not met yet.
Before we sign off here on Formula Y, I'm just wondering, what was your first like gamer tag? Was it anything cool?
Ooh, good question.
I don't think I've ever had one.
What?
Actually.
No.
You were always that professional that you never had to like make something up like Seb J0291568.
It would just be Sebi 13, I think. But we in iRacing, which is where I started, they take what you put on your credit card and they just put your name. So everyone has their full names on that. And so from that point on,
boring.
I've always been known by my full name, basically.
Thank you, Sebastian, for taking the time with Christian and I here today. But it's really interesting to hear what it takes right now to be a sim racer.
Yeah, thanks for having me on. It's been very interesting to speak about and good fun.
That gamertag revelation shocks me to the core, Katie. Can't believe it.
I was blown away by that, too. These guys need crazy gamer tags. Make it happen, Sebastian.
Yeah. So someone fix that. Thank you. Now, I love Sebastian's journey, though. It's so cool to think that iRacing and esports are making motorsport more accessible and providing talented drivers like Sebastian with a route into the sport. I absolutely love it.
I was going to say, I absolutely love that, too. And we're going to be looking at why F1 teams take part in esports more in a future Formula Y. But as for this one, we certainly know about simulators now, right, Christian?
We do. We really do. Not only how they work with people updating them and loading data in, like Matt said, but also how tracks are scanned with lasers, like Dr. DeAndre told us. We love a laser on Formula One. And also why they're so vital for drivers like Sebastian and Stoffel to help the race drivers improve their setups and improve the car as a whole.
Especially with so little testing in F1 now. So these simulators really are helping the environment too.
They are lovely stuff. Right, well, thank you so much to Dr. DeAndre, Stoffel, Matt and Sebastian. Don't forget to keep your questions and comments coming in to ywhy@f1.com. Check out our previous episodes too. Katie and I will very much look forward to speaking to you next week. Bye for now.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.